Happy Thursday. You're listening to Detroit Today on WDET. Thanks for joining us. I'm Sandra Swoboda hosting today, in part because we are doing another segment of a special project we're doing this year in our role with the Detroit Journalism Cooperative. The project is called The Intersection. We are looking back to look forward. How did the events of 1967, the Kerner Commission that looked into the reasons for them here in Detroit and other cities, rebellions, riots, uprisings, what factors contributed to those happening, and where are we today on those issues? You can see all the work from WDET and our partners at DetroitJournalism.com. The project is called The Intersection, and I have two of the most hardworking reporters on it today with me in studio. Lester Graham from Michigan Radio, welcome to WDET.
Thanks. I didn't even pay you for that. That's great.
And Bill McGraw from Bridge Magazine, welcome back to WDET.
Thanks very much.
So bring us up to speed on this project. For people who haven't seen it, Lester, what happened? We published a segment in March. We gave an introduction and looked at one of the first issues. So take us just through a little bit of background on where we are with the project.
Well, there were several stories released earlier, and one of them, you mentioned the Kerner Commission. We wanted to look at that report that the Kerner Commission put out. This was a commission appointed by Lyndon Baines Johnson, even before the fires were out in Detroit, and it came out the following year, 7 months later, with a lot of grievances of the black community and also some remedies. And we've been looking at some of these things thinking, have we made any progress on these recommendations in the nearly 50 years since that report was issued? And in some cases, there's not been much. So our first one looked at one of the things that was about political power, is about power in general. And Bill and I each did pieces about that.
Bill, we're moving forward with looking at police and community relations this month. Again, the work at DetroitJournalism.com, our work with the Detroit Journalism Cooperative. Why was policing and community relations chosen as the second installment here?
Well, in Detroit, and I'm sure it was true elsewhere, the cities that had riots in the 60s, grievances against the police department were the number one cause of complaints in the black community. There's still many African-Americans in Detroit who would have firsthand experience of what it was like dealing with the white-dominated police force, or basically the almost entirely white police force in the 50s and the 60s in Detroit, and really almost until Coleman Young took over in 1974. Both the physical abuse, the humiliations, and also the lack of policing and police protection in the black community. So that's why we're looking at police. It was in every poll in Detroit about why there was a riot, why did you riot, police were the number one cause in every single poll.
Yeah. And Lester, in looking back again, we're going to look forward in a moment here, present day and forward. But in your reporting, looking back both on the power segment last month and the police and community relations segment this month, what other similarities did you find, reasons for the uprisings of the 60s that maybe speak to what's happening today?
Well, some of the same problems still exist. I mean, in 2014, 2015, we've seen a rash of unarmed black people being shot by the police. That has resulted in protests. We haven't seen that in this area that much. We did see a protest in Dearborn. I went to Ferguson. That was 17 days of protests, and the police responded with armored tactical vehicles, snipers, and a lot of other stuff that's been highly criticized by the Department of Justice. It's ironic that Ferguson is going under a consent decree because of the actions there, just as Detroit was getting from underneath a consent decree with the Department of Justice. And you have to ask why. Is it because the Detroit police force now better reflects the population? There are more black officers on the force. Are we going to see these kind of problems not so much in big cities, but in the inner-ring suburbs now, because you're seeing black populations grow there while the white majority police force is still in place?
Well, that was a perfect segue to have Bill McGraw from Bridge Magazine talk about his work on this. The project is called The Intersection. You can see it all at DetroitJournalism.com. Bill, you've covered the Detroit Police Department here for several years as a journalist in town, and your work in Bridge Magazine this week does look at the police department. And let's talk about that consent decree that Lester brought up. Take us back. Why was that put in place, and what has it meant for Detroit?
Well, I mentioned the police department changed fairly rapidly after Coleman Young became mayor in 1974. And by 89, there was a poll that showed black Detroiters had a much more positive view of the police force than they had 20 years earlier. However, and much of that was, well, the city was black run, the police department was black run, and they had many more black officers. The force became majority black fairly quickly, and a lot of female officers too. Detroit led the nation in hiring female officers. However, by the late 1990s, something had gone awry. Well, first of all, in the early 1990s, Chief Hart went to prison for embezzling over $2 million. That was a pretty big problem. He had been the police chief for well over a decade. By the late 90s, the Free Press and other media outlets wrote or uncovered the fact that the Detroit police were killing civilians at a higher rate than any other city in America at the time, that a lot of people were dying in lockups, that the police were just making mass arrests at the scene of crimes or homicides, serious crimes, and bringing all the witnesses downtown. So there was a lot of serious problems in the department. And it became so clear that there was a problem that Mayor Archer at the time invited the Justice Department to come in, see what happened. They did a lengthy investigation, and they made the city sign these so-called consent decrees. And 13 years later, as of March 31st, the city is done with federal supervision, but they did cause a lot of changes to be made. And at the same time, almost 3 years ago, Detroit got a new chief, James Craig, who was his background is very different than any of the previous chiefs in Detroit going back 25, 30 years. He's a Detroiter who was a Detroit cop before he got laid off in the early 80s, but he rose pretty far up in the ranks in Los Angeles, a very sophisticated, big police department, and then ran two police departments in Portland, Maine, and Cincinnati. So he had a lot of experience, and he knew Detroit. Those two combinations of things, the consent decree and Craig, I think have made for a positive current situation for the police department.
You're listening to Detroit Today on WDET. I'm Sandra Swoboda hosting another a full show this hour where we're looking at a project we're involved with the Detroit Journalism Cooperative. It's called The Intersection. You can see all the work at DetroitJournalism.com. We have in studio, that was Bill McGraw from Bridge Magazine, Lester Graham from Michigan Radio. Also, Detroit Public Television has some work on this project, New Michigan Media as well. Our topic this month is police and community relations. We looked at the Kerner Commission report, which looked into the reasons for the civil unrest, disturbances, riots, rebellions, all of those labels of the events of 1967 in Detroit and other cities. Dug into the reasons, though, and the conditions, why all of that happened at the time. So our project is really looking back to look forward, we like to say. And this month, again, looking at police and community relations. So I want to go back to Lester because you went to Ferguson, certainly a city that has been in the international news, highlighting a lot of problems along these issues. So let's talk a little bit more about relating Ferguson-Detroit. What's similar and what's different?
Well, what's similar, it's a very small city, actually. It's a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri, and it has been rapidly becoming a black majority city. But the town itself still had a mostly white police force. That's a lot different than what's going on in Detroit. But it's also a lot different what happened in Baltimore and New York and all these other places. I think what really happened here is the black community in Ferguson kept hearing about these unarmed shootings, shootings of unarmed black people. And when it happened in their own town, the place erupted, exploded. They just, and one person told me, I've had enough. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. And that's why she was in the streets when she was in the streets 2 years ago during the summer.
Well, you bring up, we all saw those images of the protests and the violence and the response. And is it possible for a city to have a maybe majority white police force with a majority black population and not have these issues? We haven't seen that in Detroit. But what did you learn about why that hasn't happened in every city where that's the situation?
I think one of the things that everybody's struggling with is why it happens. And one of the theories is out of Florida State University is there's an implicit bias, an unconscious bias There was some research that was showing during computer simulations, some officers were initially more likely to mistakenly shoot an unarmed black suspect than unarmed white suspects. That's really disturbing, and these officers didn't feel like they were racist in any way, but they had this impulse that a black person seemed more dangerous to them than a white person did. Now, that implicit bias, you would think, oh my gosh, that's ingrained. That person should never be a cop. But it turns out that with extensive training, you can actually work with somebody to recognize their own bias and to reduce these kinds of incidents. I was talking with a Wayne State assistant professor in the law school here, Blanche Cook, and she said it's a good thing that we're able to do that.
Yeah. Bill McGraw, let's move back to the Detroit Police Department today. What are some of the things that that consent decree, did that contribute to big changes within the department that have maybe contributed, and we're getting into some gross speculation here, but maybe contributed to why we have not had a situation like that here?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's lots of different reasons probably why that hasn't happened. But given the volatility of the situations Detroit police deal with, you know, you don't want to be too make an assumption that it's never going to happen here, of course. But the Justice Department and the city both agree that the city has cut the kind of metrics that you use to judge this kind of situation. They've cut lawsuit payouts for civilians who have been injured or killed. They've cut civilian complaints very drastically. They've cut fatal shootings by police significantly. Holding cell deaths have been gone from like 18 in a few years to 1 in a few years. They use just one detention center now rather than precinct lockups, so it's easier to control. The homicide closure rate is much better than it used to be. So those are some real metrics that you can see that are, you know, the number of the rate, you know, that you can use to, even though the population has declined, the rate of violence in Detroit, while crime is still a tremendous problem. Detroit's always the first, second, or third leading city in America for crime.
And I should point out, we've got some information on that online in our graphics showing that crime rate, so you can compare it to other cities. You can see that at WDET.org as well. But go ahead.
But the level of violence in Detroit has really declined. One example is when you go into the new police headquarters on 3rd Street, they've got pictures of police officers who have died in the line of duty going back to 1878. And from 1970 to 74, 4 years, 25 police officers in Detroit were killed in the line of duty. Now, a couple of them might have died in an auto accident or whatever, but still, most of them were shot. In the last 4 years, only two officers have died. Sadly, one of them was by friendly fire. So that kind of level of violence has really changed in 40 years.
Yeah. Lester, what else have you seen? You've you interviewed one of the authors of the Koerner Commission report in our earlier segments on this project. What else have you seen change related to police and community relations from then till now?
Well, I think one of the things that we've not dealt with, actually, is this idea of we have racism in this country because of white attitudes. You know, that's something that was brought out, made clear in the Koerner report. It's something that is still a problem today because we have never had this national conversation about race, not in any real meaningful way, to find out what's going on here. Why do we have this problem? Why do some groups really not get along with other groups? And until we have that conversation in a real and meaningful way, we're going to continue to have incidents like this. It's just inevitable. It's human nature.
How can we have that conversation? That's really hard. It is very difficult to talk about race. We try it on this show on many occasions, and sometimes it goes well, but we still have challenges to do here as journalists, all of us.
Yeah, I think you have to have the conversation. You have to start the conversation someplace. It might not be as productive as you'd like. But, you know, on shows like this, when we bring it up, I think this whole project is aimed at looking at how we deal with racial issues in Detroit and across the nation. It's tough, and nobody's got an easy answer. It's not going to be easy.
Bill McGraw, what else are we seeing in this project that is helping further that conversation along?
Well, the two stories that Lester and I are talking about, Power, which we did in March, and Police, which we're doing in April, are just part of this year-long project we're doing with the other members of the Detroit Journalism Cooperative. We're going to be in the next few months looking at the issues that were right at the heart of the riots, not only in Detroit, but across the country, because they're all similar issues. Education, housing, race relations. Those are some of the topics we'll be bringing up in the next and writing about in depth for over the next few months.
Well, you know, the key to this is not just talking to the talking heads, the people we always hear from. We really need to get into the neighborhoods, talk to folks there about what kind of progress has been going on, what's not happened that they want to see in their city, those kinds of things. I also want to say this project is unique in the nation. I don't know of another project where you have an online magazine, Bridge Magazine, a couple of public radio stations, a public TV station, and then five ethnic newspapers all working together with the same goal. It's not easy. It's a tough job because everybody has different demands, different platforms, and so coordinating all this has been it. But it's worth it. I mean, we really want to make sure that we cover this in a way that is useful to the community and also tackles these big issues that you just don't do in normal, everyday news coverage.
Well, Lester, that's a good introduction to the year-long reporting project we have planned with all of the work from all of the partners. I'd also like to point out and thank those that make this work possible. The support for it comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, Renaissance Journalism's Michigan Reporting Initiative, the Ford Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. All of the work on the project, The Intersection, can be seen at the individual partners' websites, but also collectively online, so you can start to understand the narrative we're working towards and hopefully be part of it at DetroitJournalism.com. Lester Graham from Michigan Radio, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Bill McGraw, thanks for coming in.
Thank you also.
Stay with us. We'll be back with more on Detroit Today on WDET.